RN, your world unfolding.
G'day there, Julian Morrow with you for the second hour of the Friday edition of RN Drive. In this hour, we will be exploring the theme of women in power. Unfortunately and curiously, Gina Rinehart could not join us this evening. She's too busy squabbling with Fairfax. So tonight we're settling for a former managing director of Morgan Stanley, Afreek Campbell, will be our guest on RN Drive. Also, we'll be talking about more unwatchable TV. The most anticipated TV show for a long time, Aaron Sorkin's Newsroom, will hopefully make listenable radio, and much, much more on the Friday edition of RN Drive. And at 6 minutes past the hour, we're talking about a different sort of freak, Afreek Campbell, who has a dark past. She worked at US investment bank Morgan Stanley in the 1980s and 1990s and went on to become the first female managing director on the trading floor. After having children, she left the banking world and wrote a book based on her experiences and many other novels, in fact. Her novel On the Floor, recently released, tells the tale of Jerry Molloy, a 28-year-old Irish woman swimming with the big money fish at Steiner's investment bank in London. Spot the parallel? Jerry's work life echoes that of Afreek Campbell's, of course. And one of her experiences, she says, is that if you admit to being an ambitious woman, you're sometimes seen as unfeminine, unsexy, or macho. Coming up, we will speak to three Australian women, all of whom have held or currently hold senior positions in finance. But first, let's speak with Afreek Campbell.
I spent 13 years as an investment banker at Morgan Stanley in London, working on international bond desk. And I always wanted to write about the market long before we became the villains of the piece. And I guess what intrigued me is the human aspect of the markets and how quickly the business is changing. I always wanted to write a book about it. It's a fantastic human drama, the great plot lines of greed, the sense of being at the center of the universe in terms of what's happening economically. The character who emerged was really someone who was on the brink of career disaster, who was very bright, but essentially was not controlling her own life. So it was a story about ambition and the big decisions you have to make in life. So I guess that's a theme for all of us. But it took a long time to write, because if you're writing a novel about finance, you really want to place the reader in a world that is maybe very unfamiliar, but you also want it to be credible to people who are insiders. And that's technically quite challenging. Mm. By the time I finished the book, of course, the crisis had happened. So the story appeared to be a lot more interesting than it might have been 10 years ago.
Your career led you to be the first female managing director for Morgan Stanley. Your main character is, I suppose, earlier on in her career, and as you say, facing a point of catastrophe. Did you face one or many kind of moments of career potential suicide in your time at Morgan Stanley?
I had a very happy career, unlike Jerry, the character in the book, and I love my work. I found it really challenging and very stimulating. And yeah, it was sometimes difficult being a woman on a trading floor, but you know, I was, I guess, very ambitious, very competitive, and it was a great time to be in that business. Jerry in the book really needs to take charge of her life. I think she has bigger issues. She puts her faith in men and allows men to run her life.
I'm interested in that world of finance, and you've said that everything you need to know about human nature is presented in one bad day on a trading floor. I can imagine that many of the negative aspects of human relations can be on display that day. I kind of find it hard to imagine the more positive aspects of, you know, nobility or bravery or loyalty. How do they play out on a trading room floor?
It's a really interesting question, because I think that, yeah, absolutely, in times of crisis, you know, the chips fall and you see who's left standing. And I think that those who have incredible resilience and a sense of solidarity, a sense of teamwork, will work together. In a fast-moving market, it's incredibly difficult to keep your head. It's incredibly difficult not to give way to fear. I think that, like all of the most challenging times, what you see that at moments like that are those who fall by the wayside and who will act only in their self-interest, who will not stand up and call a halt to proceedings. I think one of the big features in the financial crisis has been a failure of honesty, a failure of openness, a willingness to lie and a willingness to cover up, usually incompetence on a very, very large scale.
Were they things that you observed during your time at Morgan Stanley, or do you think that the culture of banking has somehow changed since those days?
There's no question it's changed, absolutely. I mean, I started in the business in the early 80s, and at that time it was very different. I mean, there was a significant shift in the business when we started to move towards quants, basically. The mathematicians who moved in and the scale of trading changed. You basically started to be able to take risk at a very large scale. And that's what makes this crisis different to any of the crises going back in history, the level of complexity. And I think, you know, one of the most important things I was ever taught by a boss was always ask the dumb question, always ask the stupid question. In other words, will this work? Will this product work? Will this deal work? And I think that what happened is as the business became increasingly sophisticated is too many people stopped asking the important questions.
One of the interesting things in the book is a lot of those characters are people who look at the world rationally and through numbers, and you've talked about the kind of the rise of the quants in trading generally. To be successful in finance these days, do you just need to be very good at maths, or what other qualities do you need to be able to be successful and perceive risk appropriately?
That of course all of those things are incredibly important, but I think that, you know, if we've learned anything, and we're still learning the lessons from the global financial crisis, is that there's been a catastrophic failure of leadership and a complete misplacement of trust. In a lot of cases, the people at board level who were running businesses did not understand what was going on beneath in low down levels, and that's where a lot of the large losses came from. Did not understand the complexity of the trading strategies they were getting into and just what the liabilities were. That's arrogance and inability to be open and to be accountable. You know, if you take in people who are incredibly gifted mathematically and they're very trained, they're not necessarily trained how to behave when things go horribly wrong. And mathematical models are only as good as what the inputs are. They don't predict human behavior. On a bad day in the market, you can throw your models out the window because everything will potentially go to zero. Models don't factor that in because they factor in logical behavior. So if you've got a management who's putting their trust in these kind of trading strategies, you're going to run into a problem.
On RN Drive, we're speaking with Afric Campbell, author of On the Floor and former managing director of Morgan Stanley. Afric, you've just talked about, if you like, the character flaws of people who trade badly or when trading goes wrong. Is there a gender element to those flaws, or do you think that they just apply to, well, across the board, whether you're male or female?
It's really hard to generalise because, of course, there's far more men in the business. But there is some interesting research being done at Cambridge by a former Goldman Sachs derivatives trader, which shows that high levels of testosterone over time will lead to risk management fatigue. There is some evidence to show that male-type behaviour is great in a bull market, but when things start to go horribly wrong, that you'll get trading paralysis, so that people will start to stop trading. And the evidence would point to the fact that the more women you have and older men on trading floors, the better it is for smoothing risk. But, you know, whether or not people can start hiring on that basis, I don't know.
Well, what was your experience? I mean, obviously there must have been many rooms where you were the only woman in the room. Is there a sense of solidarity between emerging female bankers, and have the ground rules changed since the early days when you were coming up through the profession?
Personally, I don't agree with a lot of the discussion of the sort of, you know, men holding women back career-wise. I think that's, you know, very often at senior-level positions not the case. I think there's very often a shortfall in female ambition. A lot of the reason that women don't get ahead is because they don't push hard enough. They don't want it enough. That was my experience in the financial industry. Now, you know, I'm not in it anymore. I'm a writer. I certainly found I was at an American bank that, although it probably took me a couple of years longer to get promoted, and I was most definitely paid less than the men doing the same job, the real issue of getting ahead is how much you want it. And from my point of view, you know, proving that you could do a job as well or better than a guy was part of what I was about. I didn't believe in letting gender stand in my way. But I think that certainly here in the UK, the debate about why women don't get top positions is very much focused on regulation and discrimination. I don't think that's the true picture at all. I think that, you know, there is an element that women feel uncomfortable about being considered to be very ambitious, as if ambition was a sort of unfeminine trait, not very sexy, not very nice. I certainly think that that's all of the successful women I know who they've got ahead by thinking of themselves as people, not as primarily women.
That being the case, do you think that rather than regulation, it's important for emerging female financiers and senior female financiers to mentor younger women to try and, I suppose, break that lack of ambition and maybe steel up that ambition and make people go for gold a bit more?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was one of the things I really enjoyed when I moved into management, was that, you know, you could sit down and you could speak as a woman directly to women and talk about what it took to survive in a business that is very tough, for everybody, for men and for women. And whether or not you've got the stamina to stay the pace. It's quite difficult for a much older man to mentor a younger woman, if you think about it. I mean, there are lots of natural ways to do that with a younger male employee. You can play golf, you can go out drinking. It's not so easy for a senior male to do that. And mentors are incredibly important in terms of developing people's skills. But there is also, you know, there's this kind of grown out of the 1980s philosophy of the have-it-all thing for women. And I think that's somehow misleading and creates an incredible pressure for women. Some things are going to have to fall by the wayside. You're going to have to compromise. If you want a top-level job, you're not going to be able to spend as much time at home. And that's the reality of the situation. No amount of regulation is going to change that.
Looking back on some of the big calls you've had to make in your career, do you think of the decision to leave Morgan Stanley and become an author as one of your best trades?
Oh, God, yeah, now I do. And that's just because of market timing. But, you know, for me, that was always the biggest challenge in my life. I mean, I started writing when I was a kid, but I never thought I would be good enough to really pursue it. And it took a very long time for me, essentially, to get the courage to be able to do that. And I think all of the years in banking really helped in terms of, you know, to be a writer, you have to be pretty ruthless, you have to be pretty focused. In that sense, it was good training.
Apart from feeling, no doubt, a huge amount of relief that you're not having to deal with the problems that afflict, in particular, the European economy at the moment, what's your take on the state of affairs in the Eurozone debt crisis, and as well, also, you know, how is your country of Ireland faring after some very rough years?
It's been a disaster for Ireland, but yeah, and it's easy to be cynical at this point and say, well, you know, the boom was absolutely out of control, and it was, and the level. I mean, Ireland is a very, very sad story of mismanagement, negligence, incompetence, and extraordinary greed, a complete failure of political leadership, a complete failure of regulation. I'm very sceptical about the Eurozone, but I'm very sceptical about forced unions. This idea that you can take economies that are performing at different levels and that you can unite them all into a federal system, I think that's really stretching it. The EU or the idea of fiscal union is a concept that was developed in times where we didn't think this could happen. So we don't have a mechanism, essentially, for unwinding it. I think it's really, you know, nobody has a good idea what's going to happen, including all of the economists. You know, George Bernard Shaw used to say that if you want to line up all the economists and ask them for a conclusion, they'll never reach one. I think we're in uncharted territory, and I think it asks a lot of questions. This kind of environment raises a lot of questions about what kind of political system we want. Is democracy sufficiently responsive to global crises? Do we really want the kind of government that we have? Do we have too high expectations of what the state should be doing for us as individuals? I think we're just at the beginning of asking all of those kind of questions.
And just finally, Afreek Campbell, are you still in touch with many of the people that you worked with in finance? What do they make of the current situation? And have many of them rung you up concerned that some of the less flattering characters in your book might be vaguely reminiscent of themselves?
On the book, all trying to find themselves. Every time you write a book, your family and friends are looking for themselves on the pages. Now, I mean, one of the real pleasures was hearing from so many people I used to work with, you know, all over the world, it was lovely to know that people found it a very accurate portrayal of things at the time, of the era at the time. So, yeah, I keep in touch, but, you know, you have to move on. I mean, I have moved on. It's some years since I've worked there now, so I'm interested. And obviously, you watch a lot of human drama unfold amongst people that you knew, but I'm a writer now, so it's a very different way of looking at things.
Well, it's been a great pleasure hearing about that new way of looking things. Afreek Campbell, thanks very much for joining us on RN Drive this evening.